This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So we got Joe Foster joining us, UFO investigator experiencer. We're back in 1970, which was quite an interesting, eventful year. It was the year in which the Beatles officially broke up. I don't know how many of you people have seen the Beatles Get Back documentary, three parts, nearly 8 hours worth on Disney Plus. Don't know if it's worth it to have all the other stuff at Disney Plus, like Marvel and Star Wars. But we got this $1.99 offer. For that, it was worth watching nearly 8 hours of the Beatles rehearsing. So before we go on, I know Tim had a question of Joe. Either of you see that documentary? The Beatles Get Back.
Which one? The Beatles? Yes.
You saw that one?
Yes. Yes.
All three parts?
No. I saw one. I think I saw one part, maybe the first part.
Uh-huh.
Either that, I'm thinking of another Beatles special.
The Beatles Get Back. It just came out over Thanksgiving.
Oh, no. I saw a much earlier Beatles special, of which there have been a number.
Okay. Yeah, millions of them, yeah. You,
the
Tim?
The quality of the footage that they have is absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's the processing they went through to get the original colors from the film that they use, 16 millimeter probably, I don't know offhand, but it's really well worth watching if you enjoy the Beatles or, you know, enjoy that kind of music and the music history.
The key here is to understand that's what happens in the recording studio. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're doing a Broadway show. It's where the band will sit there and work out a song, and this is true with any rock band, of course, the Beatles being special and everything. And then over the hours, you gradually develop the songs. I think the most incredible thing, which you could see free on YouTube, is the section where Paul McCartney takes his bass, plays it like a guitar, and within 2 minutes composes on the fly the fundamentals of Get Back.
It's also interesting just to see how the studios used to be at that time compared to all of the digital processes that they use now to record music. So, I mean, it really is an interesting look back in music history.
And remember, the band recorded all that stuff playing live, no overdubs whatever, like they did in the early days. Anyway, we were talking with Joe Foster about what was happening back in 1970, and Tim, you had a question.
Well, I just want Joe to continue his story about the Nikes being armed and ready to fire. What was the situation that caused that?
Now, that's the interesting thing. Basically, the story, and we give tours. The big thing is take people through and give them the historical background, show them the radar vans, show them the battery control van, explain the process of the whole thing from soup to nuts. But the story that we give for that, because that is a key point when you tell people that, you know, we were ready to fire nuclear missiles in anger from Gateway National Park, which is kind of a funny thing, it gets their attention. Well, the story that we get, and I got this basically from the Army, what the Army told their people. You have to understand it's a nuclear installation, so you have the whole criteria of the need to know. You need to know only what you need to do your job. So if you're down at the launcher area, and you're working on a launch section, your responsibility is to get those missiles ready to fly within 15 minutes. That means doing all the tests, configurations, and prepping the warheads for flight. Well, you don't necessarily have to know everything, and you're not going to be told everything. The launch section guys didn't know really all that much about what was going on, up at the battery control area, or the integrated fire control, which is where the radar operators and the guy that actually gave the command to launch a missile in anger, that's where he sat. So you go through your protocols, your nuclear protocols, just like they do today, and that's what you do. You get everything ready to go, and then you wait for the command to launch. Now, what happened in this particular instance, the story that we've been giving people, and again, I don't know anything other than what I'm told about it, was that there was a single Tu-95 Bear bomber that was making a beeline towards New York City. And, of course, Sandy Hook is, you know, one of the further east batteries. So your extent, your range is about 100 miles out to sea. So, you know, you would take out the plane before it got to, you know, to do its damage. They were carrying two thermonuclear devices. Now, what happens, the protocol calls for, they're identified in an identification zone, air defense identification zone, which is about 200 miles out. Fighters are then scrambled, and they go with afterburners on, and they go out at supersonic speed to intercept the aircraft as it's heading in to the area that needs to be protected. When they get out there, there's usually two fighters, and they will, one will fly alongside the target, one will come in behind it, and if they couldn't get it to turn, they would identify it as a Soviet Tu-95 Bear bomber or whatever. If they couldn't get it to turn, the plane flying behind it would have brought it down with an air-to-air conventional warhead missile. Okay, that's the normal process for a single target. You would not use a nuclear warhead to bring down a single aircraft. First of all, Nike was the last line of defense, not the first line of defense. So what happened was, according to the story, this Tu-95 Bear bomber had just come out of a book was supposedly written by it about it. I haven't read it, but supposedly it was written by the pilot. And apparently the plane came out of a total refurb of all of its electronics, right down to the main lines. And like with anything else, you can have a catastrophic failure. Usually it happens within 72 hours, which is a burn-in period. So that plane had taken off on its mission, carrying whatever it was carrying, heading towards its duty station, which would have been flying down the east coast of the United States, probably to Cuba, and it would turn around and come back again. Well, it lost all of its power, supposedly, had no navigation, which is not accurate, and it was flying blind, and hence it was heading towards New York City. Mm. And when, according to the pilot, when he saw the fighters coming out, at least he knew now where he was, and he was able to turn away and head back out to a place that would have been safe. Now, again, I have a little bit of a problem with that whole story, because, again, there have been plenty of incursions by single Tu-95 Bear bombers, or even flights of them. But this was a unique one, according to the crew member, the battery chief. You know, it was so bad that when he got off, it took an hour and a half to bring the missiles back into a safe position. That means putting the safe plugs in and putting them back in their storage area in the magazine, which is underground. He said he went home that day. He told his wife, make me a martini and don't ask me any questions. Mm. And after I finished that martini, make me another one and don't ask me any questions. She never knew that he worked with nuclear weapons. Okay. So, I mean, but again, I have a little bit of a problem because you would never use a nuclear weapon to bring down a single aircraft. Okay, you're doing more damage to yourself, basically, than you are to the other side. So that's a true story. That really did happen. The official story is the one that we give, that it was a plane that developed, you know, some type of mechanical problem or electronic problem. But the fact that it happened summer of 1970 when that UFO had landed, leaving trace evidence behind, that was investigated by Bob Worth as well as other investigators.
Let's break here.
Okay.
We've got more to come with Joe, Gene, and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices start at just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
You've heard that supply lines are down or moving slow. And that most everything costs more these days. But good news. High-quality Sunny Bay products are in stock and ready to ship now because they're made in the USA. Like our extra-long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs, are microwavable, and come in a variety of colors and patterns. What a great gift! An extra-long neck heating pad from Sunny Bay. Also available in lavender scented. Buy now in time for the holidays and avoid any shipping delays. Available on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. They're great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. So this year, give the gift of pain relief. An extra long neck wrap from Sunny Bay. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Order now when our stock is high and shipping is fast. And happy holidays from Sunny Bay.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Hi, I'm your host, Smokey Colbert, filling in for Smokey, because after 75 years of...
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Turns out there's much more to say. Nearly 90% of wildfires are caused by us humans being careless, dumping our used barbecue coals willy-nilly. Guess the song was wrong. We did start the fire. That's why I respect Mother Nature and her trees, whether coniferous or new car scented. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Return with us now to the filling days of 1970. The summer of 1970. Joe Foster telling us more about the strange things going on, please.
Again, that was just one string of events, but there were many others as well. I also operated an antenna as a volunteer at what is known as the Evans area, which was part of Project Diana, which is really the birth of the space age, and that took place right here in Belmar, New Jersey, at a place called Camp Evans, which is part of historic Fort Monmouth, which is now closed because of BRAC. But we have a 60-foot radio telescope there that used to be a basically a deep space radar, part of the early space program, and also some of the early defense work identifying missiles and satellites from back in the 1950s. We use it as a radio telescope, like I said, and we bounce signals off of the moon because historically that was the first time that that was documented and done, was from Project Diana, which was a radar that was developed by the Army Signal Corps. That was also the Army Signal Corps labs, as well as now the Communications and Electronics Command. Interestingly, what was not widely known, it was also the area was part of the Manhattan Project. Matter of fact, the fuse mechanisms for the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were actually designed there, and the designs were actually stolen, given to the Soviets by, of course, the Rosenbergs. Well, actually, Rosenberg, his wife was innocent, but he did work for the Army there until 1945. Then he worked for defense contractors, and he got his hands on, apparently, the fuse mechanisms and turned that over to the Soviets, and that's what got him in the big, big problem. So it's a very, very historic area in and of itself. It was also historically from 1952, I believe, it was part of a UFO flap that included the Washington flyover. But they also had radar contact with UFOs from Fort Monmouth in 1952. And, of course, there was also a visual sighting by Air Force pilots that were tracking them along the Jersey Shore. So you had simultaneous, you had visual as well as radar. And the radar was actually validated by, of all people, Ed Asner of Mary Tyler Moore fame. He was actually in the Army. He was a radar operator stationed at Fort Monmouth during that event, and he actually validated it. So the area is quite interesting. Of course, we also have historic Bell Labs, and, of course, those Bell Labs is where the transistor was invented or reverse engineered or whatever, along with a number of other firsts, including lasers, fiber optics, and so on, all within a very short area, a relatively close area, hence probably the reason that there was so much interest by the UFO phenomenon. A very, very critical area.
And, of course, those radar sightings, especially in 1952 around the Washington area, were explained away as just temperature inversions. Nothing to see here, folks.
Right. If you believe that one, I've got some real estate down in Florida to sell you.
Well, just well, make sure if you sell me the real estate in Florida, it's not in a flood zone.
Well, that's what I was talking about. I should have said I've got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you were talking about some of those early radar installations that were able to bounce a signal off the moon. Some of those radars were actually involved in sighting mysterious satellites in Earth orbit when supposedly we hadn't reached that capability of sending satellites up yet.
Oh, absolutely. I think there was a Dark Knight.
Dark Knight, right. And not the more recent Dark Knight that pictures have been circulating that's probably a thermal blanket floating in orbit.
Oh, whatever they were seeing back in the 50s was solid.
Well, and plus it was in polar orbit rather than the conventional, easier to get to orbit. You know, back then, achieving polar orbit was a lot more difficult.
Yeah, but also it's a smart one because it gets to see the entire globe. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you can film the entire globe by doing that.
I wanted to ask you, Joe, before we get into some of your own personal experiences, when you were in the military, mm-hmm. you were talking about the Nike bases, and what a lot of people don't realize is that there were many of those facilities scattered across the country. I know, let's say I live in Indiana, and there was a pretty good sized one in northern Indiana that was, its job was to cover Chicago. But at the time that it was active, that interestingly enough, there were numerous UFO sightings over that part of Indiana and the lower Michigan area as well. So I'm wondering if other Nike facilities around the country had the same kind of sightings.
Well, I can give you an anecdotal story, and it's based upon I was giving the tour out at New York 56,
mm-hmm.
and there was an elderly gentleman. He was probably in his mid-80s by that time. He came through, and I gave him the grand tour and explained everything. He was a pit rat, so he would have been working down at the launcher area. Nice guy, very pleasant guy. He came through, gave him the tour of the battery control van and showed him the radars and everything else. He said, wow, he said, something happened that I can't talk about even to this day.
Okay.
And I'm sitting here now. Nike Ajax is not something that would have been considered overly top secret, maybe how the radars work or something. But for the most part, it's not something that would have really elicited the same type of control. Okay. When you're debriefed and you have a top secret clearance, and you're told not to talk about something, there are ramifications if you did. Well, he went on, he was so cryptic about this. I'm sitting there and I said, well, you know, you were at a conventional missile site. He said, yes. And he said, but what we experienced was something that was considered top secret. Now, where his battery was located was up on North Jersey. And Sandy Hook, of course, is on the East Coast. And closest to New York Harbor. Well, what he was had up there, they would have only been engaged if the bombers had been coming from over the North Pole and closing on New York City coming out of the north. Then he would have been within play. The range of a Nike Ajax is only about 32 miles, so it's not a long-range anti-aircraft missile. So I'm sitting here, and he absolutely refused to go into any type of detail at all. Now, I mentioned this to a couple of the other Nike guys. I said, what do you think he was engaged with? And they couldn't think of anything.
I'm going to go back on something here in a moment. Gene, Joe, and Tim, you're in.
The Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
You USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
One of the biggest clusters of tornadoes to ever break out in the nation's south has left at least 100 people dead in western Kentucky alone. Officials still scrambling to find any possible survivors beneath the rubble, especially in the town of Mayfield, Kentucky, where that tornado that tore through there toppled brick buildings and destroyed both the police station and the fire station. President Joe Biden assuring those affected by the storms,
whatever is needed, the federal government is going to find a way to supply it.
President Biden's already issued a disaster declaration for Kentucky. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee requesting one for his state as well. Governor Asa Hutchinson in Arkansas touring the area damaged there by helicopter, saying it's hard to fathom the scope of the damage. This is USA Radio News. Dr. Mehmet Oz of TV fame says Dr. Anthony Fauci should be, quote, held accountable for misleading Americans on COVID-19. Oz recently announced a bid for the U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania, running as a Republican, slamming Fauci in a weekend statement to the New York Post. He did not hold back, suggesting the chief White House medical advisor resign. There's been no response from Dr. Fauci to Oz's remarks. The annual Army-Navy showdown on Saturday afternoon saw the midshipmen stun their rivals, Army's Black Knights, 17-13 at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. A few hours later, Alabama's quarterback Bryce Young was named the winner of this year's Heisman Trophy Award.
Thanks to the people around me and to the grace of God, I've been able to make it here, and I'm truly grateful for that. So thank you, everyone, for coming out and everyone watching at home. Have a great night.
This is USA Radio News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
This is Jennifer Stein, executive producer of The Disclosure Dialogues. You're listening to The Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We continue with that description from Joe Foster. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, basically, we had one gentleman come through on one of our tours, and he was an ex-Army Nike Ajax crew member. Who worked in the launcher area of one of the batteries located in the northern part of New Jersey. Now, the one thing you have to understand, Nike Ajax is not a long range. It's not a nuclear missile. It's got a range of about 32 miles and a service ceiling of about 65,000 feet. So when you're looking at things that would be top secret, that probably would not have fallen into that category. Now, what he told me, and I kept asking, I said, well, you know, what event did you have that you're reticent to talk about? And he said, oh, I really can't, because we were debriefed. And, of course, when you're debriefed on a classified event, you can't talk about it. Otherwise, there are ramifications. You can be fined. You can even be put in jail. So that's how critical the debriefing is. And this gentleman took it very, very seriously. Now, because of his age, which was probably in the early to mid-80s, he was probably at the time that Arlen Bentley had his event down there in Maryland at Whiskey 93. And that was the crash of a UFO outside of the fence of the launcher area. It was witnessed by a farmer as well as a number of the crew members. It took place early in the morning. And what happened was the object hit the ground in a field, and then it took off again. But when it took off, it left behind debris. The Air Force got there very, very quickly, and they went out into the field, and they actually ended up removing a piece of debris that was about the size, described by Harlan Bentley, about the size of a washing machine. They put it in the back of a 2.5-ton, a deuce and a half, and it was taken away by men in hazmat suits, obviously for some type of contamination, and it turns out that there was some radiation issue. And what happened about 2 or 3 hours later, the entire battery, all the crew members of the battery, were brought together and were debriefed by an Air Force officer. And the Air Force officer told them what they had witnessed was the crash of an experimental helicopter, and they all kind of laughed about that because they knew it was not a helicopter. And when Harlan Bentley completed this story, they were talking about, you know, this event. Now, the event that this gentleman that came through New York 56, and that's the museum where I give tours, he related the story about his Nike Ajax site, and it was not about a crash. He would not go into any detail about it. I found that kind of strange because it was not a nuclear facility. It wasn't even at the edge where most of the activity would take place. But he still would not talk about it because he was debriefed as well. Asking several of the other Nike guys that I know from, you know, our tours and everything, asked them what they thought, and they couldn't think of anything because apparently none of them were ever debriefed by it about anything. But they still didn't talk about. One gentleman did say he worked at a Nike site that was nuclear that's also part of Gateway National Park. So we actually ended up with 48 nuclear-armed Nike Hercules missiles until 1974. He worked at the site on the other side of the entrance to the harbor, and he said that they were told by people walking by on the beach, oh, did you see the UFO that's hovering over your buildings there? And he didn't, he said, but they insisted that there were UFOs. So anyway, the gentleman, the elderly gentleman that would not talk, the only thing it could be, because it probably happened roughly around the time that the events down in Maryland with the crash, it may have been something similar that he had witnessed as well. But we'll never know because he would not divulge. Okay. That's that story. But it's all part and parcel. It's all tied in with the military, with weapons, and especially anti-aircraft and radar. And that is something that has been a common thread going through with a lot of these sightings.
Well, let's move forward to your experiences when you were a quartermaster in the U.S. Coast Guard. And I should say that you wrote a chapter about this that was included in Timothy Green Beckley's book, Alien Lives Matter. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, well, essentially the thing started, I went to boot camp in February of 1969. I reported to my first duty station, which was Honolulu, Hawaii, in June, roughly around May, June timeframe. And at that time, I spent about 2 or 3 weeks in, you know, just doing work around the base as a seaman recruit. But I was assigned to the Coast Guard cutter Mellon, interestingly. Mellon, of course, is Chris Mellon's ancestor, Andrew Mellon, who used to be a Secretary of the Treasury. And it was a Treasury-class cutter that I was assigned to. Basically, brand spanking new, state-of-the-art, a real showboat. Anyway, when I went on board there, my first cruise was about a month and a half later. We went out on Ocean Station Victor. And it was between July and August. And, of course, July of 1969, the Apollo 11 mission took place. And I was out on Ocean Station during that mission. And where it set down was about 700 or 800 miles to the south of where we were located, which is roughly halfway between Hawaii and Japan on Ocean Station Victor. And while on Ocean Station, I was going on to the midwatch, which is midnight local time for the ship, and we were relieving the off-going watch, which is the 8 to midnight. And while we were doing the turnover, which is about 15 minutes before the actual switch, Combat Information Center squawked us on the bridge and said that they were tracking targets closing on us. And then they said they were coming out of the northeast on us, hitting on a southwesterly course. But the speed was a bit of a problem. They were being clocked on the radar about 3,500 miles per hour, three objects flying in tight formation. In 1969, I don't know of anything that we had or that the Russians had that would fly across the ocean like that in such a tight formation at such a speed. And, it was a beautiful, clear summer night in the Pacific Ocean. And so we all went running out to the starboard bridge wing. The ship was facing to the north. It was drifting, facing to the north. And we were just on our 10-square-mile grid as a navigation aid. We would be transmitting our location. But anyway, sure enough, at the horizon, we picked up three points of bright white light, and they flew directly over the ship. And as they passed over the ship, we ran through the bridge out to the port bridge wing and watched them disappear to the southwest on the horizon. Now, the bridge wing is 44 feet above sea level, so if you did some math, you could sit there and kind of extrapolate and figure out what the altitude of these objects were, and you can give you an estimated speed, of which one of the ODs, the officer of the deck, did. Now, there were 14 of us on the bridge at the time of the event, including the captain. My captain was the senior captain, 06. In the Coast Guard. He would never make admiral, which would have been the next step up, because he was a Mustanger. He was not an academy man. And unless you were an academy man, you didn't make admiral. But he was a master mariner. The guy Mustanged it all the way from E1 all the way up to 06. And he was the smartest man I had ever known. And this guy you would trust with your life.
We have more, much more to come with Joe Foster. And by the way, he will be sticking around for our premium show after the Paracast. And Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Words and music. For the last year, the Federal Reserve has told us inflation is, in a word, transitory. But the Fed can't fight the music of inflation. It's what happens when we print trillions of dollars. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I've built the number one precious metals firm in the country by adding massive value. And Advantage Gold wants to earn your business by doing that for you right now. My best-selling gold inflation index report retails for $500. I want to email it to all serious investors with retirement accounts for free. No salespeople, no rigmarole, no gimmicks. Simply text the letters GII to 49776. I'll email you my best-selling gold inflation report right now. Text GII to 49776. That's GII to 49776. Let Advantage Gold add massive value, and then we'll ask for your business. Text GII to 49776.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build the red corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A.com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Our special guest is Joe Foster, joining us for the first time on the Paracast. He's got so much to tell us. I think we're going to have him back on in the near future. You're talking a lot, Joe, about your military background, and maybe before we go on and ask you about this, can you give us an overview of your background, how you got in the military, what positions you worked at?
Oh, sure. Okay, well, I graduated from high school in 66. I joined the Coast Guard in 69. I had about a year and a half of college under my belt, but I didn't feel like going on much further. So I went, and I didn't want to necessarily go to Vietnam. I was raised in one of the, what is known as one of the peace missions, peace religions. So, I mean, I could have gotten out of military service completely if I wanted to, but I felt that, you know, you had to learn what about something before you can make judgments about it. So I decided to go into the Coast Guard because I figured I'd be saving lives as opposed to taking lives. That was a naive belief, but that's another story. Anyway, so I went into the Coast Guard February of 1969. I was advancing along in boot camp, and I was sent down. When President Eisenhower died, I marched in his funeral, part of a Coast Guard contingent. And then, like I said, I went to Hawaii. I didn't go to any schools, but I scored very high on the military aptitude test, whatever that's worth. The captain liked the way I steered the ship. When I first went on, I took my turns steering the ship. And we were getting ready for our first patrol. And what you have to do is you have to calibrate the compasses and the gyro compass, you calibrate with the magnetic compass. So what I was doing as helmsman, I was told to keep on a certain bearing for a period of time, then I'd go to another bearing, and they'd be calibrating the deviation and variance of the compass. And I did this, and I kept yelling, mark, 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 because I had an affinity for steering the ship. I don't know why, but I did. And it would always stay spot on. Got to the point where the captain would walk up behind me and look over my shoulder and see what I was doing. And he noticed that it was dead on and never deviated off the bearing that I was given. And I did that for the all eight cardinal points of the compass. And he told the chief that he wanted me as a quartermaster. So they took me as a striker. I was the first striker to get off the deck force on the ship in the history of the ship going into operations. So I went and I did that, and that's what I did as I was a junior quartermaster when we deployed to Vietnam. And we deployed on other assignments. When I came back from Vietnam, I had one more patrol to go on. The first patrol, of course, I was there for the UFO sightings as well as the Apollo 11 mission. When I came back, interestingly, I saw the Glomar Explorer was tied up in front of my ship just before we left on another patrol. And, of course, the Glomar Explorer, Project DeZorian, ended up bringing up a part of a Russian submarine that had sunk under interesting and somewhat mysterious circumstances. And when I came back from that patrol, I was sent to schools at Pearl Harbor, a couple of Navy schools, where I made friends with a Navy yeoman who interestingly worked for an organization called FICPAC, or Fleet Intelligence Central Pacific. By this time, I had two more UFO sightings under my belt, another daylight sighting of a gigantic silver or mercury-colored sphere on the way back to Honolulu, and also we had a USO event right off the coast of Vietnam. So when we were playing tennis one day after work, I told this yeoman about my sightings, quote-unquote, and he started laughing. I said, oh, here it is. He's laughing at me because he thinks I'm a UFO nut. Well, it turns out, he said, no, that's not the reason he was laughing. He said, I was laughing because we get thousands of those reports every year just from U.S. naval ships. Let that sink in. This is 1970, and they had been getting thousands of reports just from U.S. naval ships every year. Of course, FLICPAC is part of ONI, or Office of Naval Intelligence. So, you know, fast forward to 2006, 2004, we hear about the Tic Tac sightings, and then we hear about the study. And I said, well, when they dump thousands of reports every year, then I'll be impressed. Okay. That is a true story. From there, after I finished my schooling at Pearl Harbor, I went back to the 3rd District, and the way that happened, that was an interesting story in and of itself. I ended up going to an organization called AMVER, where I was put in a supervisor slot. That was an officer's spot where we tracked 72,000 ships for search and rescue purposes. Very, very successful operation. But the way I got to it, it was a very circuitous route. After I got out of the schools at Pearl Harbor, I had about 3 or 4 months left in district before I was due to rotate. So I was given a job painting 3 offices, district headquarters. I had the captain's office, I had the admiral's office, and I had a warrant yeoman's office. And who did I paint? I painted the warrant yeoman's office first. And he walks in and he sees his freshly painted office. He said, what are you doing? I said, well, I had 3 offices, captain, the admiral, and yours. And he said, you painted my office? Did you paint the other ones? I said, no. I said, I wanted to paint your office first. So we laughed and we sat down and had a cup of coffee. And I told him where I was from, what I was doing, where I would like to have gone. And then we said goodbye, and I went back to my base. Next morning, I get up for muster, and as I go out to muster, they tell me, Foster, report to the base office. So I reported to the base office thinking I was in some type of trouble, probably for not painting the admiral's office before I painted the warrant yeoman. But it turns out that they had a big, thick manila envelope for me that was loaded with my orders, my airline tickets. I had 30 days leave and 30 days basket leave all waiting for me that morning. And I had to catch my flight that day. So I had to pack and leave. And then when I reported to Governor's Island, which is the 3rd Coast Guard District, I had orders for Calm Land Area. From there, they gave me orders to go to AMVER. So I got the best, cushiest duty you could ever imagine for my last 2 years in the service. I didn't have to stand any duties. All I had to do was run my shifts. That is a true story. And I think the point is that be very careful who you toes you step on or who you do something for. Because it'll come back either to haunt you or as a blessing. So, true story. And that's my military.
All right. Well, you mentioned a USO sighting when you were in the Gulf of Thailand, I think is where it was. You want to tell us about that?
Sure. Gulf of Thailand. We were just coming back from the Da Nang area. and we were heading back to our normal operations was down off the river mouth of the Sonnendoc River, which is a Navy SEAL base that was getting hit all the time by Viet Cong. They were almost overrun within a couple of weeks of that sighting. But we're sitting at the Gulf of Thailand or the Gulf of Siam meets with the South China Sea. And we were anchored waiting for our movement orders. And the captain said, okay, well, we're probably going to be here for a couple of hours. So he authorized swim call. And I don't know if anybody would want to go swimming in that because they have these poisonous sea snakes all over the place. And it's not a great place to swim. But a bunch of the guys did. And, of course, being junior man and the quartermaster team, I had anchor watch along with the other watch standers. So we were all up on the bridge, and the bridge wing, we're watching the guys diving off the main deck into the water in the aft third of the ship. And then they'd swim over to a rubber raft and climb up a cargo net back up to the deck, and they'd do it all over again. And it doesn't sound like too much fun, but it breaks up a long patrol. So anyway, we're up there, and we're watching now the sky conditions. It was overcast. It was a gray, overcast day. Sometime, I believe, it was around May. And so we're sitting there watching the guys swim. And there was a slight breeze, like a 3 to 5 knot breeze. And there was a chop to the water. And so, you know, the conditions for observing something in the water were not optimum. But what we did see, we saw this gigantic dark shadow pass underneath the ship. In the aft third of the ship. So you know the size of the ship. The ship is 378 feet long, and probably about 40 foot wide at where it came under. It was also, the keel was about 18 feet down, so we knew the depth of whatever the object was as well.
We got a lot more to talk about.
Okay.
With Joe Foster telling us about all the very, very strange things that happened during his military career. And we hope to have him continue on after the Paracast this week. So stay with us with Gene and Tim. You're in.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get cloudy. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control. And priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.